Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about the periodic table. In this episode, the Italians outwit the Americans and steal an element from the periodic table and win a prize. The hole in the very, very center of the periodic table they're able to fill, not by perhaps outwitting the Americans, because there was not necessarily a lot to outwit in this area, but then I also will talk about the periodic table through the lens of music, and with all these things I've got sort of a complicated approach, and you can go, "Pah, I'm not interested at all." So last episode we talked about the periodic table given to us by the Americans, sort of the loud end of the periodic table after uranium. So they were making a bomb, and so to make the bomb they had to make plutonium. So when they made plutonium, they really couldn't stop themselves, and it's a sort of a rather loud end of the periodic table. Curium was a bit of self-respect or self-restraint, but after that we have berkelium, californium, americium, sort of a fairly lawrencium. All these things are there to actually tell us in loud, clear, uncertain terms that this part of the periodic table was made by the Americans. And so there's a little bit of a story. There's sort of a few questions that which I didn't deal with too, spend too much time thinking about how to name the various elements. And what's it called? Astatine. It means decaying element of chlorine or of the halogen block. And I really have to say, in terms of while we're stopping at the actual, you've got the noble gases, alkali metals, alkali earths, rare earths, you have the chalcogenides, the oxygens, you've got the carbon group, it's actually just called carbon group, but it's the group which is sort of like dyslexia nightmare, is the nictogen group. It sounds like nitrogen, but it's not. It's nictogen, and it's actually spelled with a P. So that's another group, and that I think it would be group 7 in the periodic table. Group, let me see. Depends how you go. It's, no, it would be group 15. Group 17 is there, and I may as well announce my sort of numbering system of the periodic table. You've got the Roman numeral letters, so that's 1 to 8, and then you've got 1 to 18 in Arabic numerals, so that's the sort of normal numbers you make, and then they've sort of discovered that indeed the periodic table is not 8 units wide, it's not 2, 6, it's not 16 units wide, it's actually 30 units wide, that's 18 wide, it's actually 18 plus 14, it's actually, 32, which is, 32 wide, that's 2, plus 6 is 8, plus 10 is 18, plus 14 is 32 wide. And so we've got this thing is that every time we discover more of the periodic table, do we want to actually increase the numbers? And historically, we've sort of gone away from, we do say group 4 elements in group 3 and group 5 for when we're teaching about semiconductors. But really, theoretically, if we're going into the modern terms, it should be group 13 and group 15. We've added those 10 groups in there. So group, just for it, is the actual a column of the periodic table as you go down the periodic table. So a group, for instance, or the way I say it is hydrogen, lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium and francium. There's 7 elements as you go down the 7. You go 7 periods down the same group. You can sort of do the same thing for Well, the second group. Now, I tend to put the helium, being a quantum physicist, I tend to put it in the group helium in this group. So I, as a quantum physicist, say helium, beryllium, magnesium, calcium, strontium, barium, radium, down that group. So that's a groups. Now, just to, we've gone to decide, what I actually think is to actually name the actual next groups, the F block. I think you should actually say that the F block is in group 2.1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, up to 14. So it's not quite decimal, but at least it tells you that it's group 2, and then you count this subgroup underneath. Rather than a subscript, I should actually think you should put a point or a mid dot there to say that's not necessarily a decimal point, but it's another way of counting forward to get into your different groups. And so as promised, I would tell the story of how the Italians stole an element, not really stole an element, but it was in the 1930s, and the Americans had built this fantastic transmutation machine called the cyclotron. So last episode I talked about how a cyclotron is made, and that's using a bit of blackboard physics, realizing that in a magnetic field the time of an orbit is proportional to the magnetic field strength. And so you can increase the velocity up, and as you increase the velocity, it goes on a bigger orbit at a faster speed, takes a longer time to go across, or a longer distance at a greater speed. It takes the same time to reach an acceleration point. So you accelerate, and you can accelerate up and build all these different elements. And the Italians visited the people up in California at the Berkeley, I think that's the San Francisco University, and they said, "Oh, look, can we have some samples from your synchrotron? Because what's happened is that the synchrotron would have all this heavy nucleus on nucleus interaction, and some of it would get hot." And they said, "Look, can we have some of your scrap metal?" Well, that's a strange request. And they actually took the some molybdenum foil. Now, if you look in your periodic table, I've just got to work across. So molybdenum's underneath chrome. And there's a little bit of a story there. And the molybdenum had been hit by a whole heap of neutrons and radiation, and it was making, for the first time, technetium. So even though the Americans actually made technetium, they actually posted out to Italy a molybdenum foil, and then the Italians took apart the molybdenum foil and claimed the prize for discovering technetium. Also promised in this episode, I would try and discuss the music of the periodic table. And the discussion of this really stems from my observation to do with, I suppose, music and art, that the classics tend to be produced, the classics of a particular era get produced in a particular time zone. And after that time zone, we call things from that time zone neo, because it's not quite the same. There's something really authentic being produced in its original time zone. And so too is with the periodic table. There are certain groups of elements which are associated with groups of people, groups of thinking, and I suppose the periodic table contains sort of a musical signature of that time. And I'll try and explain this a little bit more, or give you an analogy which is easier to go in. So I actually spoke to this person, and they were talking about their son going into these various music Estedfords, and I just made the comment that it's interesting that a particular, the Romantic era, the actual musicians are from that era, you can't actually anything new doesn't quite fit in, and there's a whole series of understandings which go into it. And then threaded on that, this when people hear the music, there's people who hear it from the first time, there's people who really understand the history of it, there are musicians, all different groups of people hear the same thing. So all in terms of the periodic table, there's all different people who actually see the periodic table. There are people who are really immersed into the history aspect of it. There are people who are really immersed into the chemistry of it. There's people immersed into the quantum mechanics. And then you've got the casual people who come up for the first time to look at the periodic table. It's pretty much similar to listening to a piece of music. But the periodic table is actually composed with no single author from all of human culture. It's got so much history in it, but it's also composed scientifically, so it's actually not constructed like a well thought out concept. It's actually more like an extent for the different things coming in and people having different views coming in and coming on top of it all. So let's try and actually assign different musical themes to different parts of the periodic table. So it's a very sort of primitive, probably drum beating, sort of the dawn of time music you have at, say, the start of 2001, at this time with the single notes coming out. It's really, I associate it with hydrogen and helium coming across like that. A bit of early jazz music for the production of the lighter elements as it comes in the first suns. And then sort of an explosion type of music and crescendo for production of elements in the supernovas, the ions, the nickel and things going across. Then you have sort of I suppose the Harry Potter music for some of the elements which we have associated with spirits like cobalt and nickel, I was trying to think stuff like that. Then you have sort of some World War II music, a bit of coming in, or the spy music, the Pink Panther music for say perhaps Krypton the Lanthanides. Then you have sort of for the agriculture, sort of agricultural life music, so you can have sort of the pastoral themes or musical stuff. Sorry, I've just had a pause there. It probably won't sound like a pause, so I have to get back on the horse, and this is part of sort of speed podcasting. I'd love to edit it a bit more. I was looking at the different musical groups, so people can instantly relate to music. I was thinking for the Swedish section, sort of Grieg, the Mountain King, the sort of the Norse music. So for certain ones, some different types of music, but they're all totally different styles. And of course, when you get to the American one, this brash band, this sort of Colonel Bogey type of marching through, and obviously at this stage you have a few of atomic bombs which sprinkle two extra elements on it, and sort of a little subtext to it. Now the thing is that the music for each section makes sense if it's authentic in that time, and your appreciation of that music has to be, involves musical appreciation, but also a music of the understanding of the time. It brings back the era, so the you've got all these different musical styles being played together, and people use the music for different things. So people often think of just taking the music and having a background track for what they want to sell. So they may want to sell a particular product. They bring certain elements, certain music, and certain ideas, certain flavors forward, and just have a little sort of soundbite with what they want to sell. Now, one of the things I've realized is that a lot of people, what they're trying to sell is actually sell themselves, or sell their organization, or sell their their way of doing a periodic table. So in a sense, they haven't really understood the music of the periodic table. They're sort of harvesting it, like going through and taking sound grabs out of it and actually producing it. So you have people who miss sections of the periodic table because musically it doesn't fit in with the musical theme that they're producing. So they haven't actually stepped back and looked at it as this ensemble of different musical styles, and the musical styles making sense in the history for where that music came out and how the music interacts. And then you've got this complexity of different people interacting with the same music at a whole series of different levels. So you have the school kid who goes to the symphony orchestra for the first time, they pick up certain things. You have someone who's been going for many years and knows about different pianists and different styles. You have someone who's actually studied music, someone who studied music history, someone who knows the politics of the bands and stuff like that. So I'll be back soon. Sorry again, I've got, even though it sounds straight afterwards, I've just got interrupted by another phone call of someone saying, oh, can I do a podcast on electron machining of glass, which I'll obviously, since I've been asked to, I'll do that. But we're getting back to this general idea. You've listened to several podcasts as I've gone into the periodic table. Now, this is one of the things that, in general, that you hit the reset switch, you start learning again, you realize were there mistakes in the way that I was teaching, were there mistakes in the way things were taught. Are there mistakes in the actual periodic table, the way that they structured that? And indeed, there's actually a good section of mistakes all the way through. I put my hand up for making various mistakes. I'm sure I can't really remember. I remember, I've forgotten now, but I do remember feeling, oh, I have made a mistake in the periodic table. I really can't remember what it was, but then you look at different things, misconceptions and how it's taught at school and the effect of that, but then misconceptions of how it's presented in on the internet and across like that, and you see different groups interacting with it, and then you get this overall effect that this is a cultural phenomena that we're looking at. It's in flux and we're moving forward, and part of the moving forward is this broader and broader view of it, the periodic table, by different groups at different times, with different groups coming in together, and where do we come from that? And the answer is, look, I really don't know. I do think there are some fundamental fixes that we can do to make it simpler and easier, but there's also the deeper understanding of its inherent cultural complexity, as we have with the cultural complexity of music. All these different music styles from different eras with different authenticities, different ways of people producing the music, different people using or producing the music in different ways, but people using it in different ones. So there are people, musicians, who can read the notes. There are people who can read the chemical equations. There are people who can use the chemicals. There are people who can not necessarily play the music, but actually use the music to market what they want to do. Like, the music is simply a tool for them to sell their products, be it their actual physical product, the product of their idea, or the product of themselves as a product. And with this, with almost everything that you do, there's this viral content, or this Trojan content of this ideas that you implant in the ideas that you give to people, which says, well, this is the level of questions, ask no more. That seems to be a bit of a Trojan thing, or a way that if you have an idea which conflicts with what you believe, you question the source of the idea rather than just saying, well, that's interesting. It could be the source, it could be the idea itself, it could be me, it could be this general research timeliness. We're in a time, and it seems to be in a time where we have to actually resolve an issue really quickly and move on, because we are a consumer and a cog in a much bigger situation, which I think is not necessarily happening. So that's just the thought for you, that an analogy of what the periodic table is, besides what it physically is, like the musical instruments can be physically there, the orchestra can physically be there. It's actually those instruments are playing a cultural history of different notes in different ways, which are interpreted in different ways. So I think that's an analogy which hopefully I won't have to do another periodic table podcast. I hope, really sincerely hope, this is the last one I will have to do. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.